It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Hey guys, welcome back to Money for Lunch. I'm excited to get this party started. My first guest, John Nemo, he's one of our regular contributors. He's also one of the biggest influencers you'll find on LinkedIn. John Nemo is a former Associated Press reporter, author, award-winning PR director, and social media consultant. John Nemo is also known for being the creator of LinkedIn Riches, an online training program that helps individuals, brands, and businesses leverage LinkedIn to instantly generate more leads, clients, and revenue. John has generated more than $135,000 of revenue in just 90 days using LinkedIn, all of it within a tiny niche, and all of it without meeting any of his clients in person. As always, John Nemo, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Hey, Bert, great to talk to you again.
Absolutely. All right. So I'm excited to have you on the show. I know, John, that you got a brand new book out just released this week. It's called LinkedIn Riches, How I Made $135,000 in Just 90 Days Using LinkedIn. Let's talk about this. First of all, tell us more about the book.
Right. Well, thank you. And I want to point out, too, for your listeners, I've got an exclusive thing going on right now. So this is exclusive radio talk, people. But I'm actually giving out copies of the book for free right now. So if you're listening, if you go to LinkedInRiches.com, you can actually download the book for free before the public sale begins. And the reason I'm doing that, Bert, is it's part of my LinkedIn strategy, actually. And the book is all about, obviously, how to really leverage LinkedIn, like you were talking about, to get clients, to get revenue. And it's astounding to me that more people don't understand what a powerful social network this is. It's up to almost 300 million users worldwide. They're adding 2 new members every second. And it's literally the best marketing network out there for professionals to use for social media, marketing, getting clients, getting business. And so the book really, you know, boils down all of my secret sauce, all my knowledge, into, you know, pages, into step-by-step kind of actions where I walk you through, here's how I did this, here's how I did 6 figures in 90 days, and, you know, here's specific examples and stories. And so really had a lot of fun with it, tell a lot of great stories, but also give people a lot of good practical advice. And again, if people want to pick it up for free now, I'm doing that for a few more days, and then obviously it'll go on the market at the regular price. But what I'm finding is it's great for me to get the book out there and spread around, because more and more people have success on LinkedIn, which then in turn just brings more clients to me. So it's great. Everybody wins.
Sure. No, I love that. You know what? And what I like about this too is that this is something that you created because it's something that you did. It isn't theory. It isn't it isn't a bunch of junk. It's the fact that you use this to make 6 figures in 90 days, and I like the fact that you know I've talked about this before, that it was also in this tiny niche, and man, I think that this gives hope to a lot of people. And you know, you mentioned about LinkedIn being whatever it is, 200 or 300 million people. The difference between LinkedIn's 200 or 300 million people and let's say Facebook's one plus whatever billion people is that, you know, Facebook is to me just for everybody, everything, you know, especially if you want to see a bunch of pictures of cute kittens, right? Facebook's the place to go.
Oh, yeah.
However, if you want to do business, Facebook is about business, especially in the B2B space.
Right. Yeah. LinkedIn, they call themselves the professional network. And so everybody there.
Right.
It's on LinkedIn for one of, you know, 2 reasons. One is to maybe find a job or hire someone for a job, and the other reason is to do business, to find clients, to make deals, to get a vendor. And to your point, you know, to give people hope out there listening, you know, if you haven't heard my story or understand LinkedIn at all, it doesn't matter what niche you're in. I literally picked the smallest niche possible, kind of by accident with my background. I wanted to sell marketing services to debt collection agency owners, and it doesn't get any more niche or small or market-oriented than that. And there's only about 4,000 or 5,000 debt collection agencies that even exist in the United States. So it's not like I had millions of potential customers and clients. But what I understood when I tapped into LinkedIn was this network literally does all the work for me as a salesperson. They literally, you know, will put everyone together in one room, so to speak, and I get to go and meet them all and talk to them and engage them and eventually then sell them my services. That's really, if you want to boil down LinkedIn to its essence, it's like a huge professional cocktail party. And it's like walking in and they have signs, right? Everyone over here under this banner is debt collection agency CEOs. Everyone over there under that banner is talk radio hosts. Everyone over under that banner is small business owners, you know, selling whatever widget it is. And so that's why you can go on LinkedIn and you can be so targeted and you're not wasting time and you're not reaching the wrong audience. You're not spraying your content in front of people that aren't interested. You're only engaging with people who are, by the way, looking for exactly what you have to offer. And that's really the power of LinkedIn. Now, the other part of it is really bringing in, Bert, we've talked about this before, but understanding good sales technique and bringing in much more Dale Carnegie-type sales approach than, you know, the used car salesman, right? So you're bringing value, you're helping others, you're making it about them and how you can make their lives easier. And if you take that approach with LinkedIn, just like in real life, the results are astounding because people want to work with you because guess what? You're solving all their problems for them.
Right. And you know, and so I want to talk about that for just a second, you know, and I think that, you know, when you talk about the Dale Carnegie type of sales approach, you know, I want to talk about this just for a sliver here, and that is, you know, what we all have experienced on LinkedIn, and you know that you're dealing with somebody who's either a newbie or unsophisticated or a douchebag, for lack of better terms, when, you know, what they do is they contact you on LinkedIn, and they don't build a relationship. They contact you, you accept their contact, and then they try to sell you something. Boom! That's what you want to avoid.
Right, and that's so annoying. And it's just like cold calling or telemarketing. It's interrupting people. And to our advantage, Bert, as people who don't do that, you really stand out. You know, and I really get into this in the book and in my online training courses on my website, LinkedInRiches.com. There's all kinds of stuff. But I really get into the psychology of LinkedIn and what you need to do, right? And so you really need to connect with people, build a relationship, personalize it. Don't try to close everybody on the first contact, right? You build and build and build an ongoing relationship. I've had people come to me a year after we connected and hand me a $6,000 marketing project out of the blue. And I was like, oh, I didn't even know, you know, that you were still looking for a marketing project, you know, when I talked to you a year ago. Oh, our budget got approved, and, you know, you've always been staying in front of us with your content and your group and all these other techniques I talk about in the book, and they come to me. You know, I attract them. And so what I talk about when I'm teaching clients, you've got to think about lifetime customer value as well. And if you're just going to try to get on there to squeeze somebody for a quick sale, you're going to turn off a potential source of ongoing revenue and referrals for the lifetime of that person. So the approach that works best on LinkedIn is that Dale Carnegie approach, being patient, being friendly, being helpful, not being pushy, and, you know, really understanding that the more value you bring, the more great content you share or groups that you have, contributions you make, it just naturally comes back to you then.
Right. And you know what? And this is, you know, for the most part, this is the way you build your business anyway, right? I mean, you know, if you're cold calling somebody, you don't cold call somebody and say, hey, John, I'm Bert, buy something, because that's not going to work. You know, even if you cold call somebody, it's you want to build rapport. You want to try to build a relationship. You want to hopefully make a connection so therefore you can maybe solve a problem and maybe get an appointment down the line. And you know, and LinkedIn is no different. I think for a long time, people thought that the Internet, because, quote, it was technology, was going to be different because it was technology, And people forgot that the technology is only managed, for lack of better terms, by the people behind it, right? So, you know, technology is the surface that we see, the LinkedIn or the Facebook or the email, but it's connected to a person, and that person is only going to respond to the right strategies, period.
Right. You hit on the key point. We're still dealing with people, right? I mean, ever since
yes.
we were cave people haggling over which dinosaur bones to swap, that's how we did business, was relationally. There's a great example
right.
in Dale Carnegie's, you know, in How to Win Friends and Influence People, his book about a salesman in the 1930s that for years had struggled to get this big account, and he would always meet with this guy at his office and get shot down because he was always just pitching him. And one day he noticed on the guy's desk a book of stamps. Like, what? And he was like, what's that? Oh, my kid is big into stamp collecting. I'm trying to find him these rare stamps. So the salesman went out, found the rare stamps, mailed them to the guy. Hey, you know, helping out your kid, hope he enjoys, nothing else he said. The guy gave him this huge account like a week later. You know, and it's the same thing on LinkedIn 70-plus years later.
Yes.
What they do, too, with LinkedIn, Bert, that people don't realize is if you take, you know, even 14, 15 seconds to look at someone's profile, most profiles that are filled out, I'm going to see, oh, here's Bert Martinez. Here's where he went to college. Here's where he grew up. Here are his hobbies, his interests, his passions. So now I can connect with you around non-work things when I do my invites, when I send you messages. We can be friendly. We can talk sports. We can talk about where you live. We can talk about sailing or golf or your sports team. And we build a relationship. We become friendly. And you enjoy hearing from me. And so it's much easier to sell you as a friend, as somebody I have a genuine relationship with, than just, oh, he's a vendor and all he wants is money. And, you know, it's like we switch cell phone providers or internet providers all the time. Why? Because we're only negotiating on price and we have no relationship and we don't care, right? We don't switch
right.
doctors or, you know, friends very easily, right? Because there's a relationship. It's much harder for me to leave you as a business or a vendor if I really like you, even if you charge more.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So that's just – and that's the same with LinkedIn. And you hit on it, and the book really gets into some of the nitty-gritty tips and details about how to do this. But where LinkedIn really makes a difference in real life is you can do this at an amazing pace, a very rapid pace. You can bang through these invites, you know, 20, 30 in an hour, and that just puts your lead generation on steroids because now you're able to generate conceivably hundreds of new leads a day, hundreds of new connections and possible clients, and just build and build and build, and it becomes this huge momentum and snowball. And that's, you know, when I get into my own story, I talk about even though I had this small niche, it didn't matter because I was so targeted every day. It was just, you know, creating more and more momentum. And it's an amazing network. I wish more people understood how to use it. That's why I wrote the book. You know, I really want them.
That's right. That's right. Well, and I want to say this because, you know, since I've gotten to know John and he was gracious enough to let me check out LinkedIn Riches. And what I liked about LinkedIn Riches is, first of all, it isn't complicated. It isn't, you know, 100 videos that are just going to overwhelm you. It's five or six videos. They're short. They're very concise. They're very, very, action-packed. I mean, it's just do this, and you'll see results almost instantaneously as you start making these little changes on your LinkedIn profile. You'll notice that you know, people are finding you more, that you're coming up in searches more, and it's just almost instantaneous. Hey, you know, and so anyway, so we're going to, if you guys are interested in getting the free book or checking out LinkedIn Riches, go to LinkedInRiches.com. And we're almost out of time, so I wanted to ask you this, John, real quick, because I know that LinkedIn recently had a new publishing feature where members can create and share their own blog posts and content on LinkedIn. What is this? Well, tell us about it, and I want to give me your opinion about the impact that this is going to have.
Yeah, this is a game changer. So basically what LinkedIn is doing this year, slowly rolling it out, all 300 million members, we're going to have the ability to create and share our own blog posts right on LinkedIn, right within our profiles. And the reason that is so valuable is you now have all your content, all your expertise, all your best things that you want to share right there on LinkedIn for people to Zoom, share. It sends it viral. The first few posts I did on it, I got thousands of people viewing my, you know, profile and sharing and tons of leads. And it's just, it's an incredible tool, again, if you share it in the right way and don't just use it for sales pitches. So LinkedIn's only getting better. And if you don't get on now, you're really going to miss out on a very easy opportunity to really, really boost your business. So I'm excited. It's been great reaction to the book so far. And again, for a limited time, we're going to have it for free. So again, I would love people to get in, let me know what they think, and you know, keep helping them kick butt on LinkedIn.
I love it, man. I think it's exciting. And again, guys, John Nemo, you can find him on LinkedIn if you want to connect with him there. He's very easy to find there on LinkedIn. Also, check out the book. Check out the website. It's called LinkedInRiches.com. John Nemo, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing.
Thanks, Bert.
All right, guys, we're off and running. Great stuff there by John Nemo. Just a fantastic way to organically, inexpensively grow your target market, connect with your target market and grow your sales. LinkedInRiches.com is the place to go. Check it out. You'll love it. We're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to be having fun for the second time with Jesse Carey right after this.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Bro
and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool.
You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, who's next?
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Hey, guys, we are back. Well, for you guys that were with us yesterday, we had kind of a weird deal that sometimes happens when you do a live radio show, and that is we had my special guest, Jesse Carey, who were talking about the melting – it's called melting – the melting pot, or you can check it out at meltingpotsaz.com. That's meltingpotaz.com. And they are a fondue restaurant, and we were talking about it, and all of a sudden – you know, the radio had a brain fart, and we lost all sorts of everything. Everything went in, just as sometimes will happen on a, like I said, on a live show. But we've kind of left off when we got disconnected yesterday, disrupted yesterday. We were talking about how fondue, specifically meltingpotaz.com, is the most romantic place in Phoenix. And so I kind of want to pick it back up there again. And let me tell you a little bit about Jesse. Jesse Carey is a student at Arizona State University and will be graduating with a degree in marketing and event planning from W.P. Carey. She is currently the assistant marketing specialist for the Phoenix area marketing melting pots. She works for several construction companies as well that specialize in restaurant, bars, and nightclub. And she handles their marketing, website, and social media. And as always, Jesse, welcome back to Money for Lunch.
Hi, thank you.
Yeah, so kind of a fun time yesterday. Yeah, and so you were explaining about your romantic booth, and so I want to start up there again because again, I found this to be such a cool feature of the melting pot. I just want everybody to hear this again, and this is tell us about these little special booths that you guys have created there.
Absolutely. So we have 10 curtain booths that are just private little booths. Like I said yesterday, you know, you're knee-to-knee with someone, your loved one, hopefully. And then you have one burner, and very intimate, very romantic. And we can set it up with flowers or anything like that. We close the curtains, you know, when the server leaves, the server has to knock to get back in there. So it's very romantic, very private, and couples love it.
Yeah, no, I just thought that was so cool. I was talking to my wife about it. We're excited to go down there and check it out. I just love this idea. And also, you know what? In case you guys have not heard of the melting pot, it's a fondue experience. Yeah. And so you basically have this. She kind of alluded to this burner with your cheese on there, and you're just dipping, and you're basically sharing your meal, and it's very cozy, right?
Yes, it's very, very cozy. It's very intimate. Even if you're not in one of those curtain booths, it's still very intimate. Our goal is to make you feel special and like that you're having an experience more than just going out for dinner. You know, it's like I said, it's a two-hour experience, so you're enjoying the person you're with. And you know what's funny? Our cell reception in the restaurant is actually terrible, and we love that. So that
nice.
People aren't sitting on their phones the whole time, or you know, people will always ask us for a Wi-Fi code, and we're like, nope, no Wi-Fi code. You gotta sit there and talk to them. So.
All right. Well, no offense. No offense, but I'm going to say this, but typically the people that I tend to see most on their phone on a date happen to be the younger generation. Am I right?
That is true. I agree with you, but even here, the only time someone's on their phone is to time their food, pretty much. So really, even the younger generations, I do proms and everything, and they're pretty good about it. So.
Okay. All right, so you know what, and I love this. So it's cruddy cell phone reception. I know that a lot of women just perked up their ears. What? You know, I'm not going to be interested. My date's not going to be interested by the cell phone. It sounds better already. So, I think that if you guys actually put up some kind of lead walls or whatever, you know, that block out all cell reception, that would more people would like that even more. But let's talk about this real quick. You mentioned yesterday that fondue really has a very long history. I mean, it's been around for several hundred years, and it's only been in America for, you know, roughly a short time.
Absolutely, yeah. It started in Switzerland in the 1800s and then kind of floated over to France, and it popularized over there. It's the national dish in Switzerland. So, you know, and they make most of the cheeses and everything. A lot of our ingredients are from Switzerland-based. We even use, you know, the same recipes that's not exactly the same, but, you know, a variation of recipes that they used back in Switzerland. But it came over to America in the 1960s, and then the first melting pot was in 1975. So, and we've kind of had the handle and the grip on fondue restaurants since then, so.
I love it, man. I love it. Hey, okay, so let's talk about your menu. Let's talk about, walk us through maybe some of the new items that you guys are on the menu, but let's talk about the menu a little bit.
Absolutely. So we, every month we have, or every 3 months or so, we have some fondue features. So it's three different items that we bring in and sub out, mostly seasonal. So right now we're featuring our garlic and herb quartet cheese fondue. And that amazing. It's got some goat cheese in there. It's made with a white wine base. We have butter taste and fontina cheese. There's some scallions on top and then a garlic and herb spread that mixes in. Oh, my gosh. It's amazing. I'm drooling just thinking about it. It's so good. We also have our spring Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just chuckling. No, go ahead. You're good.
Oh, okay. We've got a spring salad right now that's also really, really good. It's got some more of that goat cheese mixed in there. There's some dried cranberries, some candy-coated almonds, and a lemon poppy seed vinaigrette. So our feature menu kind of tends towards the season. So it's spring right now, so everything's kind of light and, you know, very flavorful. So it's amazing. And then we've even just updated our drink menus. We've got a ton of Arizona craft beers and a ton of Arizona wines, which we think it's pretty unique, and we're really excited to be featuring all of those. So they've been selling like crazy so far, so it's a good thing.
I love it. I love it. Okay, now let me ask you this. I just got somebody who sent me something on Twitter. So it sounds like everything is cheese-based, right? So what happens if somebody is lactose intolerant, maybe it's not a good place for them?
Cheese is definitely not the only thing we serve. Cheese is just that first course, and then the second course is salads. They're handmade salads, so we can modify those in any way. We're a very gluten-free friendly restaurant as well as allergies. So everything
nice.
That we make is so fresh, and it's so fresh and prepared right in front of you, so it's very easy for us to modify to any of those dietary needs. So if, you know, if someone doesn't want to do cheese, then we can skip them straight to salads. And we do our entree fondue style, too. So it's a pot of some flavored broth, and then you're actually cooking all of your meats and veggies right in that broth and then dipping them in seven different sauces when you're finished. So it's very friendly in all aspects, and we're very customizable to whatever the guests will need or whatever they want to enjoy.
Yeah, you know what? I love this. I love this concept. And how many locations do we have here in the wonderful Phoenix area?
We have three in the valley. There is one in Ahwatukee on Ray, just kind of right past the 10. Got one in Scottsdale on Hayden and Via de Ventura, right down the street from the Salt River Field over there. And then there's one in Arrowhead, so pretty North Phoenix, Glendale area, on 59th and Utopia. So we're pretty spread out. We cover the valley in a good way.
Gotcha. Okay, so Mother's Day is coming up. What do you think? Is Mother's Day a great opportunity to take your mom and try out the melting pot?
Absolutely. We love Mother's Day. We do a Mother's Day brunch, so we open early in the morning, too. I think we open at, I'm pretty sure we open at 11 this year, 11 or 12, and we've got mimosas, there's champagne. We're doing a contest, and, you know, you'll have to stay tuned on our Facebook. It's Facebook at PhoenixAreaMeltingPots.com. So we'll announce our contest. We're doing a giveaway. It's going to be an awesome package that we'll throw together. So, and it's a fixed menu, very easy for moms. They don't have to cook. You know, everybody can come in and help her cook. So it'll be fun. We love Mother's Day.
I'm excited. Jesse, it's been a blast to have you back. And this time we got to talk without being interrupted by technical glitches. So this time was really extraordinarily fun. And guys, if you're in the valley and you want to check out what we're talking about, it is a lot of fun. Check out meltingpotaz.com, meltingpotaz.com. And it's a lot of fun. Jesse, Carrie, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me back.
You bet. Guys, we're off and running.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Hey, guys. We are back. My next guest, it's Maysoon Syed. She's a comedian, writer, tap dancer, co-executive producer of the New York Arab American Comedy Festival, and UCP of New York Women Who Care Planning Committee member. Man, that's a mouthful. Maysoon, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
All right, so you know what? I'm so excited to have you on the show. Somebody had forwarded me your video that you did on TED Talk.
Cool.
And I thought it was probably one of the best talks ever. It had so much great stuff. I mean, it had your comedic flair to it, but it also had a great message. So I'm excited to have you on the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. I'm excited to get a chance to chat with you.
Absolutely. Okay, so here you are. You're the executive producer of the New York Arab American Comedy Festival. Do we have that many Arabs doing comedy? Are you guys, is it gotten to be really a big thing?
Yes, we really do. What's interesting about the Comedy Festival is we founded it in 2003 because at the time, Arab Americans were being treated as an other, as an enemy, and everything you saw in media about us was negative. So me and my fellow comics, who just happened to be of Arab descent, said, why don't we get together and do this? And all of us had been working professionally separately before we started doing the comedy festival. So, yeah, you'd be surprised at how many of us are out there. And actually, Arabs were big in television comedy too, like Danny Thomas and Jamie Farr, Vic Tayback from Mel, Kathy and Jimmy, Veronica's Closet, Tony Shalhoub, Monk. We really are the heartbeat of comedy.
I love it. I love it. You know what? And what's so funny is when, you know, I think what happens when people hear Arab American, people automatically think kind of what you said, the stereotype that you see on TV.
Yeah.
And I could see how, yes, I could see how it could totally put an entire nation under this negative cloud. So this is an exciting thing that you're doing. Hats off to you. Congratulations, because, you know, this goes to show anybody that if, you know, that you can take, that you can do something about whatever the media is doing, right?
Yeah, but if you want to do it, you got to do it well. And that's why we made sure it wasn't just like Arabs who know how to make a joke. We tapped comics who had experience, who had been on Showtime, Comedy Central, who had done TV work, and got them to kind of come out as Arab and do this festival. Yeah.
Wow, this is exciting. And if I'm not mistaken, this has been going on, you said, for 10 years now?
A decade, yeah, 10 years. Our 10th anniversary was last October, and we've been really blessed. We've done huge comedy clubs like Gotham, and, you know, it's pretty mainstream, so we're very lucky. And there's definitely a crossover audience. You know, you don't just walk in and see a bunch of brown people hiding. It's a really diverse audience.
I love it. Okay, so, and this takes place every October?
Every October or the first week of November, depending on when Halloween falls.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
That's a smart move. That's
and
a smart move.
And people can find us on ArabComedy.com, and everything's there. If you go to ArabComedy.com, you see all the actors and the history and the pictures and some clips, and it's fun.
Well, cool. Well, I'm going to see if I can make it out there and join you guys this year and support you. I just love, first of all, I love comedy. I think it's one of those things that, you know, everybody's heard this, that, laughter is great medicine. And so I've always loved comedians because, man, if you ever feel down, nothing better than a good comic to raise your spirits and change your energy and make you feel good about life, right?
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, it's a great universal language. And what I love the most about comedy is I think we live in a world where we're very censored right now, and comedy is kind of the last place that you can really be honest and in the moment and live and say it as it is. And I think a lot of us look to comics to give us our news more than we look to the news. So it's a really interesting time for comedy.
Well, you know what, and I'll add my twist to that, and is I think we look to a lot of comics to tell us the real news, right, or to help us maybe digest what the news is saying, right, and give us some points of thoughts. So I think that you're right. A lot of comics really, you know, make you think. Hey.
I mean, I write about the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, and every single thing I write about it is comedic. And people are like, how do you do that? And I'm like, how do you not do it? At this point in the game, how do you not? You know, so I think I kind of got a lot of people who wouldn't want to read about it otherwise to take a second look.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about this real quick, because, again, you've been doing comedy for over a decade. And what was one of the craziest experiences which stands out in your memory?
I've had a couple of really insane experiences. I started doing comedy way before YouTube. And, I was doing comedy in the comedy clubs at 1:30 in the morning with, like, 7 Swedish tourists who didn't understand English as my only audience. And the first paid gig I ever got was driving other comedians to their shows in New Jersey. And I would go up and pick up these big-name comics, and they would find themselves sitting in a big gold, like, Jersey Jeep driving down the New Jersey Turnpike at breakneck speeds with a woman with cerebral palsy behind the wheel. And they were just terrified. terrified. And I just remember the looks of these comics as they sat, like, huddled in the passenger seat thinking today was the day they were going to die. So that was always
fun.
Oh,
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. Well, you know what? And here's the other thing I like about that story, too, is that very few people nowadays, I think, would be unwilling to put in the time and as you did, and drive other comics around. I mean, to me, that's what a great way to connect with these people and maybe
yeah.
learn a little bit and develop some relationships that otherwise you wouldn't have a chance to do.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I say I grew up before YouTube, because I got to sit in clubs and be the new comic who was waiting my turn when Dave Chappelle would go on stage, or Chris Rock would go on stage, or Jerry Seinfeld would go on stage. And now, you know, like I said, they just do the shortcut where they put a clip up on YouTube, they get their million hits, they're on Ellen the next day, and the whole, you know, tradition of comedy is kind of lost on them. But
right.
there's a generation of comics in New York City that are still doing it old school. Like, New York is definitely the place where if you want to do comedy, you can still find an open mic every single night in the city.
That's cool. That is so cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about this, because I understand that you have a screenplay in the works.
I do.
Tell me about the screenplay. What's this about?
So I've always been really disturbed by the fact that disability in film is often portrayed by able-bodied actors playing disabled. And these actors always win Oscars. Like, whenever an able-bodied actor plays a disabled role, they get
yes.
a standing ovation and they get an Oscar. And it's really disturbing to me, because we in the disabled community watch these portrayals and we see them as caricatures. So I've
right.
always wanted to be an actress, but no one will hire me. So I decided, you know what, I'm going to write my own screenplay. And I had one thing and one thing in mind. I wanted to write a movie where the character had a disability and it was the least of her problems. So I've written a play about a small-town dance teacher who has cerebral palsy and has a dance studio called If I Can Can, You Can Can. And it's all about her and her love life. And she's not desperate. She's not trying to be healed. She's not screaming, you can't love me because I'm disabled. And I've never seen that character. We've never gotten to see a character that's empowered and just happens to have a disability. So my goal is kind of to present that while winning an Oscar and getting fabulous clothing for free in the process.
I love it. I love it. Okay, so in this screenplay that you're putting together, there's a role, somebody's going to be playing your mom and your dad. Do you have anybody in mind that you would like to play your mom and your dad?
I do. You know, you said that you saw my video. So even though it's
yes.
just my voice right now, I think anyone who's ever seen me will agree that the perfect person to play my mom is Cher. Because Cher doesn't have cerebral palsy, but she behaves like she does. And I think that would be such a cool balance to have her and I kind of just swaying and talking to each other, and one's totally disabled and the other's just Cher.
I love that. I love
and
that. I could just see that happening, both people swaying back and forth.
Just swaying back and forth with the long, black, straight hair, just kind of, you know. I think it'd be fantastic. And then for my dad, I would want Jamie Farr, Klinger from MASH. I mean, he's Hollywood
oh, yeah.
comedy royalty, and I think he could really capture the essence.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know what, and speaking of your mom and your dad, in that clip, you talked about your mom and your dad and how, you know, they didn't put any limitations on you. They you know, they sent you to school, and you just – they basically – really did not allow you to feel sorry for yourself or feel even different just because you had cerebral palsy.
Yeah, they showed absolutely no mercy. I tried at a very young age to get out of doing chores by being like, I am so frail and disabled. Please let me watch the Smurfs. And they were like, get up now. Yeah, they showed no mercy, and they pushed me. And like I said, I have three older sisters, and anything they did, I had to do from, you know, kindergarten to college. So I was really, really lucky to have parents who challenged me, but also parents who really invested the time it took to raise me. You know, my father would wake up early and he would do exercises with me like we were in the military, and I know that that helped me get through the school day. And, you know, they invested so much time and energy, and my poor mom is still investing time and energy in me because I'm a lifelong project.
I love it. All right, so let's talk about this. If you could change one thing about your world, what would it be?
If I could change one thing about the world, I would remove all borders and disarm people. And then we could let all the crazies kill each other and the rest of us could live in peace.
I love it. Yeah.
Involved. Yeah. No, really, because I've spent so much time in the third world, and I've spent a lot of time in the United States, and this whole concept of borders is just trouble wherever you go. And I want to see a little less violence in this world and a little more roles for disabled people on television.
Yeah, you know what, and you brought up an interesting point. Because
was that too far of a stretch?
No. Because here's what I find interesting, because, you know, when Americans hear about, you know, border problems, they just think about America's border problems. But, you know, you and I have had the pleasure of traveling around the world, and border problems exist almost everywhere.
Everywhere.
People are always complaining about their borders.
And then violence is universal. It's like, you know, I think I live such a blessed life in the United States, but violence against women is rampant in our country. Gun violence is an issue in our country. So you have violence of one sort in the third world, and then you have a whole other type of violence that's just as terrifying in the first world. So that's why I say, I mean, we've got to find a way to disarm and become more civilized people.
Yeah, we really do. I think that, you know, when people quiet their minds a little bit, you know, I think that everybody can make that, you know, everybody kind of makes that same consensus that, you know, we as a people, we are all sharing the same planet.
Yeah.
You know, what's the old song? People are people, so why can't we get along?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's by the B-52s or whatever.
I'm watching the rights that we as American citizens are willing to give up out of fear, and that to me is terrifying, that like we don't even blink twice when a city is put under curfew or when we're told that, you know, we're being spied on 24/7 or that the war that we went into was unjust. We don't even react anymore, and that kind of worries me, that we don't think we have any control, that this is no longer a country for the people, by the people. And I think we need to get back to that and to get out of this endless cycle of violence.
I agree. All right, let's talk about this. Any projects or any events or any anything coming up in the near future here?
Well, in my lengthy intro that I choked you on, I mentioned that May 7th in New York City, I'm doing an awesome event that anyone – anywhere in the world can participate in. I'm doing the Women Who Care Luncheon at Cipriani's. This is an event that United Cerebral Palsy of New York City puts on every single year, and it's an amazing fundraiser. And United Cerebral Palsy doesn't just help citizens with cerebral palsy. They help people with very diverse disabilities, and they really do not just help, but educate and advance the quality of life of these people. So I love being a part of it. It's being hosted by Susan Lucci, who's like total daytime diva. And if you can't make it to the actual party on May 7th, you can buy our gift bags, the Grava bags, online. And these gift bags are full of goodies, and they're like high-priced bags. Like, they're quality. They're not like paper that's going to rip. So people can come to my website, maysoon.com, and learn all about United Cerebral Palsy Women Who Care, and either come join us for brunch at Cipriani or buy yourself a gift for Mother's Day.
I love it. And it's Maysoon. It's MaySoon.com, maysoon.com.
Yes,
Maysoon,
I'm
thank
so
you so
lucky.
Much for stopping by,
Sharon. I bought my name, it's two American words, so I'm so excited that I got it before anyone else.
Well, you know what, I enjoyed having you here. I want to promote your May 7th event, so we'll see what we can do about getting the word out to help you support Women Who Care on May 7th at Cipriani's, and then look forward to having you back again.
Thank you so much for having me on, guys.
You bet. Guys, we're off and running. Great stuff there by Maysoon Syed. She is just fantastic. You can check her out at maysoon.com. You can check her out on Twitter, Maysoon Syed. Just check out her YouTube. I think you'll fall in love with her. I certainly did. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be back right after these words.
Well, I'm not sure what it is. I guess I'll be okay.
Mm. I'm calling the studio, Matthew. You're not shooting today.
Just get some rest.
He bought it.
Hi, can I get my CRV brought up, please?
Roderick.
Oh, yeah.
Roderick.
Life is packed with things you have to do.
But sometimes you gotta live a little.
Matthew, you poor thing. You sound awful.
How could I resist?
Look, I don't know what to tell you. He's sick. Actors get sick sometimes.
Thanks.
Have a good night.
Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
Get going in the all-new CR-V from Honda.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Hey, guys. We are back. My next guest, Trevor Johnson. He's the vice president and co-founder of Rexy Real Estate in San Francisco with 12 years of experience in commercial real estate and hundreds of millions in transactions. Trevor has a keen eye for spotting trends and patterns in the market. Using his pattern recognition skills and deep knowledge of San Francisco and California, he expertly navigates complicated transactions for his clients, helping them to build long-term value and wealth in real estate portfolios. Trevor Johnson, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right, so let's talk about this. Let's talk about San Francisco. It's obviously your home there. What is the state of San Francisco commercial real estate market right now for prospective investors?
It is on fire, to say the least.
hey, it's not the first time.
Yeah. And, you know, with recent fires in the city, it's literally on fire.
That's right.
The market is very strong right now. With the huge influx of tech money that's been flooding in since Apple opened up the App Store for the iPhone, and every, you know, developer in the nation vying to be here, to be in the mix with everybody else who's creating apps for this new app economy that we're seeing in this new trend in tech. Everybody's here, and all the venture capital's here. Office space is leasing like crazy. Rents on residences are going through the roof. I mean, I think we've actually surpassed New York in price per square foot for a residential property at this point, for renting anyway. It's absolutely.
Wow.
Out of control.
You know, that's amazing. You know, when you say that is just that's amazing you know, when you wrap your mind around that you guys are surpassing New York style rent. That's crazy.
Oh yeah, no, I mean it's a lot of my clients own multifamily properties in the Bay Area, and many of them own properties here in San Francisco. And what they've taken to doing lately is actually selling their multifamily properties in San Francisco and shifting that money outside of the city. As you know, the rents are climbing elsewhere in the Bay, you know, commensurate with San Francisco being kind of the anchor point for that. But because they've owned their properties in San Francisco for so long, and you know, it's a huge, huge boon for them. They're essentially selling their San Francisco assets at peak of the market. And right now, I'm actually in the process of putting together a deal for a very large landmark property in downtown that would most likely set a record for price per square foot for commercial property. It's a pretty insane market right now. I mean, Salesforce just signed a huge, huge lease for the new large portion of the new Transbay Tower that's being built. You know, and they currently, Salesforce is occupying some of them. I'd say they're probably the largest tenant in downtown San Francisco right now, spread across many, many buildings and over a million square feet.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about this. What's your take? What other areas of the state are good alternatives and also maybe that you see in that are, what do you call it, high demand as well?
Well, in commercial real estate, you don't always want to focus on areas that are necessarily high demand now. You kind of want to look for areas that are going to be high demand in the future. So right now, a good focus for investors in California is to look at a lot of the retail options. There's tons of retail in a lot of the areas that are doing really well, but these retail centers are completely neglected. Deferred maintenance, the tenant quality might be pretty low. These kind of properties have sometimes been left to stagnate. And getting into a property like that, re-tenanting the property and improving the property, making it look better, cleaning up the landscaping, you know, just simple things you can do with a retail property to, you know, maximize your rent, you know, get new tenants in there that are going to be better tenants than what you had before, new leases, longer leases. Then, you know, after a 4 or 5 year hold, you now have an asset that's, you know, worth selling or continuing to hold and making income. Now, some of the areas that I think are going to be strong areas for this are all along the peninsula right now. There's, you know, a whole number of little small communities, and each of these small communities have, you know, their business districts. Well, each one of these business districts has opportunity in all of them. It's just a matter of finding that opportunity. Currently, I'm right now, I just put into contract a deal in downtown San Francisco, or actually in the Mission District, which is probably one of the most up-and-coming areas in the city right now. And it's a lot of the retail is turning over hugely there. And this property is a retail property, but it's going to be redeveloped into office space. Now, the tenant that's in there is a national tenant, great rent. You know, they're going to be there for at least the next 3 years. So the buyer has the opportunity to, you know, collect their income in the meantime while they're getting all the entitlements done for the property and figuring out exactly how they're going to maximize their investment on the piece of land. And we're seeing a lot of infill development or redevelopment, stuff like that happening in different portions of the city. But in my opinion, I believe that some of the best opportunities in that kind of stuff are in some of the outlying communities. I mean, Hayward, Fremont, San Leandro, you know, a lot of these areas, you know, as people get, as the working class people get pushed out of the city by the technorati, it will, you know, definitely increase the demand for retail services, neighborhood services. A lot of these people that are used to living in the city where they can, you know, walk around from store to store to store and, you know, do their errands or whatnot. These people are going to be looking for communities and neighborhoods similar to that outside of the city where they can kind of get that kind of feel. So, you know, downtown areas in towns like, you know, Hayward and San Leandro and Fremont, stuff like that, a lot of these communities are, you know, in the process of changing zoning laws, you know, encouraging redevelopment. And these cities are going to be, you know, where the long-term investments are going to be, where the 10 to 15-year investment is going to be right now.
Gotcha, gotcha. Let me ask you this. Do you see this trend continuing? You know, because there has been some real estate experts, or let me rephrase that because I don't know if they're a real estate expert, but there's been some experts who have said that the markets, both real estate, the home market or the residential market, and the commercial market, have not necessarily stabilized, in that there is a possible second crash coming. So, what's your take on that? Do you see it continuing the growth pattern and stabilizing or crashing? What's your take?
Well, based on the data that I'm seeing right now, the residential sales market is seeming to stabilize. The commercial leasing, like office leasing market, which was going through the roof just last year, is seeming to stabilize a little bit. So we're seeing a little bit of correction with a lot of the new apartments coming online in the next. We've got 30,000 units going in over the next year or so. They're going to be available. So with the added inventory, that's going to really help bring rents back down to more manageable levels for the working class, and take some of the pressure off some of the properties that you know, are rent controlled, and should hopefully prevent more of these Ellis Act type evictions where they, you know, buy the property, kick everybody out, rehab the whole property, and then flip it to another buyer who then goes back into the same business of renting it out as apartments, or they sell off the units as tenant in common interest. And, you know, right now with the market where it's at right now, I'm guessing that we've got probably a 2-year stabilizing period. And barring any unforeseen major economic events, I think the market is going to continue to remain strong here for at least another 10 years. I don't particularly see a big crash coming. I do see a number of companies failing here in San Francisco. I know that, you know, there's just, it's very similar to the first dot-com boom. There's a lot of kind of frivolous companies. And here in San Francisco, we actually have a number of companies that are essentially relying on unfair business practices and violating the law in order to operate. So companies like that are essentially doomed to fail, and they will.
Right.
And you know, that's, we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars in VC capital invested in those companies. So, with the political winds blowing the way they are in the city, I don't see any crash coming anytime soon. I definitely do see some corrections happening, but I don't see a crash coming. I think if a crash is going to come, it's going to be predicated on something else, not in California. It's going to be some other economic event that's going to affect us nationally.
Sure. So some possible minor corrections at every market. All markets have their corrections a couple times a year, but no giant dip, no giant crash. Trevor Johnson, we're out of time. Love to have you back another time.
Absolutely. Anytime you like.
All righty. Guys, great stuff today. Really enjoyed today's show. A lot of great guests. As always, remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.